The Swaling, Part 29. Do you believe any of this nonsense? Of course not. They're not going to sign it, are they? You'll see. Myself and Miss Dodd of the Pakistan High Commission are enjoying a presentation as part of the British High Commissioner's annual social. There is a tang in the air. Crop burnings across the straits in Sumatra are threatening the evening. I am juggling my face mask from palm to palm in irritation. Miss Noor is already wearing hers. In front of us, the odious Sir Julian Minsk stands on a podium behind a microphone, a for European community bunting. He coughs as he gives us a lecture on the forthcoming EU-Singapore trade deal. The acrid remains of burning Indonesian stubble isn't the only thing that sticks in the throat. Diversity, inclusion, equality, I mutter to Miss Noor in disbelief. What's that got to do with crates on the dockside and end-user license agreements? There are always strings attached, Mr. Worth. I can understand that, Miss Noor, but this is ridiculous. It's not as if Singapore needs the money. Even in Singapore, the banks are never full, Mr. Worth, which gives Mr. Sir Julian an opportunity to make the wind blow in a particular direction. At that point, the wind obliged. The stars disappeared. The smog from the southwest now above us. Experience suggested that the next gust would bring it to lung level. I estimated another 3 minutes and we'd be cavalry charging up the lawns, coughing and blowing, elbowing past the VVIPs to reach the veranda. Fortuitously, this point in the proceedings, the old colonial plantation building promised not only shelter and fresh air, but a buffet. Sir Julian mentioned progressive for the umpteenth time. He was standing under a banner strung between the Singapore national flag and the Union Jack, which ominously read, Progress Singapore, rather than the usual Forward Singapore. Regardless of orientation, he wheezed between mentions of bank bonds and tourists. What's that got to do with trade? I asked of Miss Noor. It's leverage, Mr. Worth. You want the trade deal, you agree to the agenda. An agenda which appears to be driven by, she coughed, despite the face mask, perhaps gagging on her next words, which were, social liberalism. Is Pakistan going to sign up to this kind of crap? Of course not. We get the money for nothing. We don't even have to pile crates on the dockside in Karachi or forge user license end agreements for arms shipments. It's known as aid, she noted. The audience was positioned on the lawns by rank, lined up as if a medieval army. Children sat at the front, cross-legged on the grass. Junior chancellery stood behind them, then middling diplomats and their families, including me and Miss Noor, followed by the self-made, who could hardly see, VIPs and VVIPs, who, from the veranda, had an excellent view. The bad thing about this order of battle was that Miss Noor and myself had to stand a little bit too close to the oily pariah Sir Julian Minsk. The good thing about it was that, if you've lost your wife earlier in the evening, and assuming she's not a princess, then you're likely to bump into her. I felt an arm creeping around my waist. Not a flirting Miss Noor getting carried away with herself, but the beginnings of a little squeeze from my other half, Nicole. Congratulations were in order, which I passed on to her in a secret whisper, disguised as a kiss on the cheek, and an apology. Congratulations on the baby, my love. Sorry, darling, I thought the pregnancy test was a pen. That's why I put it in my pocket and wandered off. Miss Noor spotted it and put me right. Nicole and Miss Noor exchanged brief pleasantries. Sir Julian droned on. Coughing and spluttering increased. At the fringe of the compound, the tops of the trees had now disappeared. In the torches and floodlights, their lower branches were already bathed in brown dust, as were the garish-coloured tiled roofs of the billionaire's vulgar mansion next door. I put on my face mask just as the front rows, the seated children, broke as if a medieval army under arrow fire. The little ones picked themselves up and scampered through the grown-ups, like voles through a cornfield, while all about fumbled for their own masks. Aware of the way the wind was blowing in every sense, Sir Julian didn't so much make his closing remarks as alter the tone of his voice to suggest that the sentence he was on was his last. He was rescued by Mr. Jigan, our MC, and the voice of Bukit Timah Racecourse, who boomed us towards the buffet, as if putting us under starter's orders and giving us the off. A trot towards the residence became a gallop. One of the rules of diplomacy is to be nice to everybody all of the time. Another is to be completely unflappable whilst being unable to breathe, being trodden on, being elbowed in a stampede, and realising that you're going to reach the tables laden with food a bit too late. Inside, the French windows were closed in reasonable time, but we were still covered in dust and coughing. A light fog was about the chandeliers, decorated by little whirlpools spinning around the slowly rotating ceiling fans. Perhaps because of her condition, Nicole had suddenly developed a craving for seaweed. We were able to push our way to within reach of it, but I remained a little bit too far away from the sweet and sour duck, Perenan Canan style. The High Commissioner's kitchen had prepared this in deference to our most special guest, Singapore's top banana, Mr. Lee. The recipe was from Mr. Lee's mother's cookbook. It was reputed to be exceptional, but I couldn't quite get at it. Blocking the way was a thin Malay in thick spectacles who had something important to tell me. Another rule of diplomacy is that there's no such thing as a bore. There are always things to be learned and people to be cultivated. Someone does go on for too long, it's your fault for not changing the subject or moving without causing offence to someone else in the room. If the boy's a pedant, put him to use. He could always tell you about your old school tie, the one that your maid had bought from a market store because yours is in storage. Or you could ask them who Mr. Lee's best chap might be. I'd just been promised their assistance, but had no idea who it might be. These were the things that I was pondering as the thin Malay, sporting an easily recognisable middling oil company tie, shared his own thoughts. "You know, it's called a swaling wind," he said. I touched my tie. He didn't take the hint. "Swaling means a controlled burning to improve the land," he continued. "But the Indonesians don't do it properly. They just set fire to everything in sight, and they do it in the wrong weather conditions. It sends a smog over here. You know, Mr. Worth, I think it's an English word. Are you familiar with it? From the burnings of the goose moors, I think." "Grouse moors," I corrected him. "Yes, I'm familiar with it," I reassured him. "It means a very selective burning, very carefully done, just the right part of the moor, at exactly the right time, in the right conditions, the right weather. If done properly, it removes the debris and the pests, encourages the new growth, and protects the next year's game birds. Thoroughly good thing, done properly by professionals, focused, exact, and constant. Forever, year after year after year." I was boring him. My wife came to the rescue, squeezing me by the arm, distracting me. "Something's happened," she whispered. "A movement here." Her hand was about her tummy, patting it with her evening purse. "Already? How far gone are you?" This being our first, I wondered when hubbies were first told of these things. 4 months, 6 months, 8? I began to panic. "I mean my phone," she replied. "I can feel it buzzing. Would it be very impolite?" "Of course not. Another rule of diplomacy, keep your phone switched on at all times and don't be afraid to use it, albeit discreetly. Imagine you're the last to find out that the tanks are rolling across the causeway at Johor, or you found out at the same time as the rest of the diplomatic corps, but not until it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're slightly pickled, the maid's pulling your shoes off, and there's not a lot you or any of the missions can do about it." Nicole opened her evening purse and revealed her cell phone. Chinese characters danced with each other across the screen. Ominously, or fortuitously, the jury was still out at that moment. The commotion was coming from the tracking app. "Mr. Steen is in the building," we whispered to each other simultaneously. To be continued.